Oh, again, great to see everybody today. When I was growing up, I don't know, there are a couple of things that draw me to passages that have a lot of names in them. I don't know why that is exactly, but two things I'll mention. Number one is when we would go on vacation, and I guess some people would pull out a Gideon Bible or something like that, my dad would pull out the phone book. And I thought it was the yellow pages or something like that, that he was looking at. And you'd walk over and he was looking at the white pages, the listing of names. You know, I mean, we would do this. We'd be every state that we would go to, always stayed at a Holiday Inn. Mom always wanted to stay at the Holiday Inn. And he'd pull out that phone book and that was his reading material to go to bed at night. And I'd be looking over. I'd be like, what? Do you know somebody here? Are you looking for somebody here? No. Well, then why are you? I don't know why you. Why are you reading the white pages? And he was a math major too. Bob said that before service today. He loved to watch. He loved to see how the numbers looked. He wouldn't look at the names. He'd look at the numbers, the phone numbers. I know. I thought he was nuts. You guys probably think he was nuts too, but. So I grew up with my dad reading a phone book. Oh, Jim up here, you probably do that same kind of thing if I know it. Like numbers, yeah. He liked the numbers, but just that list of names. I think there's another thing that I appreciate. My tradition of growing up and studying the Bible, one of the things that we would talk about was every word in the Bible is important. Now, I've learned since then that there are passages that tell me something that this is most important. There are passages that talk about those things. But I learned, you know, if you're going to start reading the Bible, don't skip over Genesis 5. Just because it's a list, a genealogical list, and has a bunch of names that you can't pronounce anymore. Don't skip over that chapter. You know, when you come to Numbers, if you make it that far after doing all the other lists that you've encountered, if you get to Numbers, don't skip over the census readings, you know, how many were in each tribe and all the families. When you get to, as we're going to get today, to Ezra and Nehemiah, there's more census numbers. If you're in Chronicles, there's a list of priests, priestly families that David assigns. If you get on over into the New Testament, the very first chapter that we have in the New Testament is a genealogy. The genealogy of Jesus. And I find that genealogy fascinating. So I guess it's both my dad reading the phone book and my tradition growing up that says every word's important, even if you can't pronounce those names. So I'm going to a list of names today. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but I'm going to be in Nehemiah chapter 3 today. And I know you're going to say, Darren, what can you get from this? I find it to be one of the most exciting chapters in the Bible. And it's not because the names are interesting. It's simply because I feel like this shows the work of God in an incredibly powerful way. And I hope that you, I hope I can win you over today. That you'll start reading the list of names. when I look at the Bible, I enjoy names because names make the story very personal to me. It is a story. It's not just a list. It's not just a list of commandments. It's not just a list of events. It's not just a list of names. It is a story. And when I come across a person in that story or a name in that story, I realize it wasn't just a storytelling way out there, but there were real flesh and blood people involved. And therefore, this story is meant to be personal. It's meant to be a place where I could insert my name into that story. And I would be affected in the same way they were. Oh, I might struggle. with some of the passages, like when Peter, you know, Peter, he's helpful because he's just like us. Puts his foot in his mouth, doesn't quite understand, struggles with arrogance at times. In the end, all he's got is he has to hold on to Jesus. And because I know Peter's name, I realize, you know, I could put my name in that very same place. I struggle with putting my foot in my mouth. I'm arrogant, stubborn, ignorant at times, but I sure want to hold on to Jesus. And so I can enter into the story as Peter and say, I'd like Peter's story to be my story. I'd like Nehemiah's story to be my story. I'd like Jesus' story to be my story. So the names are a way to jump in and say, this is my story as well. And so I can find myself in the story. I can find others in the story and see how God is working among them. So in Ezra and Nehemiah, and there are two books in our English Bible, but there are one book in the Hebrew Bible, Ezra and Nehemiah. I think you really ought to look at them that way. The reason we have two books is all of a sudden you get over to Nehemiah and he uses the first person about himself. And so we treat that as a separate book, but it's really not. Use these together. But there is a movement in Ezra and Nehemiah. I hope when you're studying the Bible, one of the things you'll look for is movements that happen. It's a great way to keep the whole story together and not just little pieces here and there. But also, those people in the Bible were on a journey. I am on a journey. You are on a journey. And I love how the biblical text helps us to move on that journey. So look for the movement that's happening. And one of the movements that's happening in Ezra and Nehemiah is that every single person is becoming more and more involved. What do I mean by that? Before exile, and even during exile, you had very important people. You had your VIPs. You had kings, such as in Judah, the lineage of David, who was such an important person. And important kings that followed, like Hezekiah and Josiah. These were incredibly important kings to Judah. And it was as if at that time that the faith of the king determined the faith of everybody else. It was like it starts at the top. You also would have the priests. So you had kings, you had prophets and priests. These were leaders who would... whether the priest and their work that they did in the temple around in Jerusalem, or the prophets who would speak the word of the Lord. And again, it would seem, you can go to the prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel. They talk a lot about this group of three, kings, prophets, and priests, because how they would go would be how the people went. And so it was top down. But something is happening in Ezra and Nehemiah. It is not so top down in these books. Oh, it starts with some powerful leaders like Zerubbabel, who leads back people from exile back to Jerusalem to rebuild the city. Joshua is the high priest, and he comes back and they partner together. Even Zechariah, describes them as two branches of a tree working together. So you do have important people. When there was pressure coming down from the empire, the Babylonian Empire or the Persian Empire in this case, when the power comes down and says stop rebuilding, it was the prophets Haggai and Zechariah who were raised up and said, no, I know they said stop building, but God wants us to keep building, so you keep building. And Haggai and Zechariah take a leadership role. So it starts Ezra and Nehemiah starts with leadership of the governor, Zerubbabel, high priest, Joshua, prophets, Haggai, and Zechariah. But along the way, the people start to rise up themselves. And the leaders start to take things more to the people and say, we need to do this together. And you will see the people begin to work together more and more and to stop relying on who's the big person at the top going to tell us what's he going to tell us what to do. Now it's we as a people are hungering for what God has to offer, and we the people are willing to do the work. And that's what you see in Nehemiah chapter 3, is that you see all the people coming together. Nehemiah, he was the one who first captured the vision. The walls of Jerusalem are down. We are vulnerable to the enemies around us. We don't stand as a good witness to the power of our God. And so he wants to rebuild the walls. I don't know if you remember, go back to Nehemiah chapter 2 and watch Nehemiah, because he's riding a donkey around the ruins of Jerusalem, but it gets to a point where the donkey can't even make it. He has to go on foot. It's so bad. There's not one stone left on another, you might say. And Nehemiah then takes it back to the family leaders, the elders of the people, and says what God had put in his heart to do, to rebuild Jerusalem, to rebuild the walls. And then the people rose up together under that vision and said, we will do this work. And in Nehemiah 3, you really start to see these barriers, natural barriers, that all people have, but these barriers start to come down as the people just gather around these walls that are in ruins and say, let's get to work. And so what are the barriers that are eliminated for the greater good of the city of Jerusalem? First of all, you see the barrier between men and women breaking down. That women, especially in Ezra and Nehemiah, and again, we're talking in a culture and time where you know, the men are the leaders, but the women are starting to show they are involved as well. In Nehemiah 3, we see verse 12, there's a mention of Shallum, son of Halohesh. Am I pronouncing these names right? No, I have no idea. It's a dead language. Don't worry about it. When you're reading the Bible out loud, just act like you know what you're doing. You'll be fine, okay? So Shallum, son of Halohesh, ruler of a half district of Jerusalem, repaired the next section. There's sections of the walls being built. And he repaired the section with the help of his daughters. What a great statement there, right in the middle of this book, this chapter of all these sections of the wall being built by different families. Here's this mention of a man and his daughters working together. That theme continues in the book of Nehemiah because Nehemiah on several occasions wants to show that everyone is involved. And one of the ways he does that is he mentions men and women together. Or perhaps, as we'll see in Nehemiah 12, men, women, and children. Everybody is participating. Nehemiah chapter 8, one of my favorite chapters, because, again, this is not top down. In Nehemiah chapter 8, the people call out, bring out the law and read it to us. Ezra, he's not shy. He's going to bring out that law. He's going to read. But Ezra's not the one who said, let's do this. The people did. And so Ezra brought out the law on the first day of the seventh month, and he brought it out before the assembly, which was made up of men and women. Nehemiah wants you to know that. And all who were able to understand. Everybody's getting in on the action here. And Nehemiah wants everyone to be aware of that. They do finish Jerusalem, and they have a massive celebration. I'm actually going to talk a little bit about this in our singing time today. But in Nehemiah chapter 12, they have an enormous citywide celebration. They've rebuilt the walls, and the walls were not just like, you know, one brick thick. They're actually, people would live in the walls of Jerusalem. So they're very wide, wide enough that you could, they had parade on the wall. One went, one part of the parade went this way and one went the other way, and they just celebrated all day. And Nehemiah says, on that day, they offered great sacrifices, rejoicing because God had given them joy. The women and children also rejoiced. It's just Nehemiah's way of saying, everybody's getting involved. And the sound of rejoicing in Jerusalem could be heard far away. This is not a statement about, it's not a statement about gender. What it's a statement about is everybody is important to this. Everybody is getting involved. And so you see that beginning in Nehemiah 3. When the people work together, barriers are broken down. How important that is. Another barrier that you'll see kind of being broken down here is between leaders and civilians. Again, we're breaking down that top-down leadership model that was so prominent in their culture at that time. We got to get to work, and so everybody puts their hands, picking up the stones, mixing the mortar, whatever you got to do to get the walls back up. You see this in a couple places in Nehemiah 3. Again, sorry, I can't read the whole chapter to you today. You would probably fall asleep while I was doing it, but here's a few verses, such as the Dung Gate. Why is it called the Dung Gate? I'm not sure, but you think it had a better name, but it doesn't. The Dung Gate was repaired by Malchijah, son of Rahab, ruler of the district of Beth Hakarim. He rebuilt it and put its doors with their bolts and bars in place. That's just one example. You'll see several. This person is ruler of a half district or ruler of a district. You'll see priestly families and their leaders. And then next to them, just in one section over, repairs were made by men from Gibeon and Mizpah. Malatiah of Gibeon and Jadon of Meronoth, places under the authority of the governor of Trans-Euphrates. You just have some citizens of the land bringing people in to help with Jerusalem. That's right next to someone who's led by rulers. Now, does it always work? No. There's one verse in this that just, the next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa. But their nobles would not put their shoulders to the work under their supervisors. Barriers are being broken down, but there's some who still are having trouble cooperating with that. The men of Tekoa, they work, but their nobles do not. But you know what? The men of Tekoa, they didn't just repair one section, they repaired two. They repaired another section from the great projecting tower to the wall of Ophel. So you got leaders being involved, but you've also got the civilians, just the citizens who are just gathering in and saying, we've got work we've got to do together. This is an important part of saying, again, God is in control, not just people in authority. And one of the things that happens with Nehemiah himself in the book is he is often showing himself not as governor power of the empire, the Persian Empire, but he shows himself as one of the people. Such as while everybody's working, what does Nehemiah do? Well, neither I nor my brothers nor my men nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon even when he went for water. They didn't go and put on their nice royal outfits and march around the, the person who likes to be foreman, you know, so they don't have to really pick up anything, you know. That's not Nehemiah. Nehemiah is saying, I didn't act like that. I didn't put on my royal, you know, my royal outfit and start marching around and so everybody could see me. Well, I didn't even take a shower or change clothes the whole time because they couldn't. We're in this together. Nehemiah, you'll see that several times in Nehemiah, where he refuses to take a role because he puts himself as just one of the people. I encourage you to look for that as you read the book. In Nehemiah chapter 10, and this is a time they've read the law, they've seen the ways that they have not followed the law, and so they want to make an agreement, an actual written contract with God. And so they write this contract, and the elders of the people sign the contract. But Nehemiah wants you to see, this is not top-down leadership anymore. The rest of the people, together with their wives and all their sons and daughters who are able to understand, all these now join their fellow Israelites, the nobles, and bind themselves with a curse and an oath to follow the law of God, given through Moses, the servant of God, and to obey carefully all the commands, regulations, and decrees of the Lord our God. This is not just somebody saying, let's do it. It's everybody saying, let's follow God. Let's do what he says. So you see, that leadership model of top down is broken away. We're not waiting anymore for somebody to tell us what to do. It's time to work. It's time to work. And so everybody joins hands together to do that. And then another powerful elimination that happens here is you have in-towners and out-of-towners. Now, that may not be like, that may not seem like a big deal, but when the people come back from exile, they've all got land, the family land that they want to come back to. They've all got farms that they want to get started again. Their own personal wealth, their own personal family and their traditions are out in the fields. And God is saying, and the people are saying, let's go in and rebuild Jerusalem. Well, the out-of-towners could easily say, well, we're going to go farm. You city guys, you build your own city. They could have easily done that. Haggai challenges them. Each of you are going to your own home, while the home of God is lying in ruins. They could easily say, that's not my job, that's a priest's job. That's not my job, that's Jerusalem's job. I got my own stuff to worry about. But the people join in as one and say, this is the promised place of God. He said his presence would be there. That's where he meets with us in the temple. That's where we make our sacrifices to him. It's all of our place. It belongs to all of us. And so they all do the work. You got in Nehemiah 3, verse 28, above the horse gate, the priests made repairs, each in front of his own house. They're actually going to live in that area. Next to them, Zadok, son of Immer, made repairs opposite his house. And you might expect that. Well, of course they live there. They want it to look nice across the street, so property values will stay up. I don't know what. All sorts of things they may be saying. But then you have the repairs next to him were made by the priest from the surrounding region. They said, that's our place too. And so they come in and say, this is we're all of God's people. The work should be done by all of us. So these barriers broken down because they decide to get to work. I don't know any other greater unifying factor than doing work together. I'm looking forward to this lunch this afternoon, not just because of getting together with the family of God from all over the area. I'm excited what we get to do as Sierra Madre. As hosts together, it enables all of us to say, this is our work together. And we are all greeting and hosting and welcoming and creating space for unity to happen today. That's a powerful work that we're doing together. Now, the people then claim all the work as their own. No one is off limits to doing the work anymore because they're all one people. And the exciting thing is the result of all this is God is glorified. Now, you got to understand, there's no miracles in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. No miracles. There's nothing about this that anybody would look in and say, rocks didn't float back into position. You didn't have like the opposite of Jericho with, you know, the walls coming up by the power of God or something like that. It doesn't look like that God has done this. But to see all those people crossing all those barriers to work together for the common good, that in itself is miraculous. There's nothing that brings people together like that except God and His kingdom. The people themselves are the miraculous presence of God. He didn't levitate the stones in place, but it was His people working together under His calling by His power and protection. It's not surprising. Nehemiah says the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. When all our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. What an amazing testimony to who God is and what we can do in our service to Him, what we can do in our ministry. Sometimes it's not the content of the ministry or the action of the ministry that's most important. It is the family doing it together that is the greatest light to the glory of God. I hope you are more and more inspired for the Sierra Madre congregation to bring great glory to God. And that is going to come from our unity, our love, our passion, and our working together. That is what will demonstrate the presence of God in our midst.